has certainly been dealing with it. And it is such a serious issue, which is being talked about so much more now than it would have been 30 years ago.
Absolutely. I mean, when I first started with Nexus, I said to the board that our mission statement should be that we don't want to be here. They sat back aghast saying, you know, we obviously want the charity to continue, but my point is I don't want sexual abuse to be happening. So today we're celebrating the 30 years of being a charity in Northern Ireland. And we've got a fabulous day of speakers presenting around the area of sexual abuse, whether it's from internet safety to self-experiences. It's just going to be a fabulous day to recognise that we've been here supporting survivors for 30 years, but also that it is so prevalent in today's society that there is a greater need for our services in the future.
The most recent example, probably high-profile example, is Maria Cahill coming forward and talking about what she allegedly went through. We look at the Ruban inquiry and those people describing the horrors of institutionalised violence, whether it be physical or sexual, towards them. Now, a lot of what we're hearing about is from the past. How serious is the problem at the moment? Or indeed, do people who feel they could have got away with some form of sex attack or sexual interference with other people in the past now realise that you certainly won't get away with it today? Or can you get away with it today?
Well, you can only hope that the increased media attention that the subject is getting, that some perpetrators are having second thoughts about carrying out this crime, that it is more difficult to hide from it. But when the actual calls that were coming through to Nexus increased by 40% when the media onslaught started with Jimmy Savile, then it shows that it is only the tip of the iceberg that we're hearing at the moment. There is far more hidden pain we're aware of, and it's a crying shame that this such a crime happens behind closed doors, that there can be so much shame and guilt passed on to the victim from the perpetrator that encourages the secrecy and the denial.
So there are children, there are families living with that horror at this very minute in houses here in Northern Ireland.
Absolutely. I mean, you can only look at the stats from the Childline service and the need for NSPCC services for all the children that are being abused. You hear the stories of the child sexual exploitation rings that are going on. You see clients walking in the door of Nexus with school uniforms on. It breaks your heart when you see that, because you know that this is no longer historic. Yes, there is historic pain, but this is live and happening in our societies as we speak. Mostly in family homes, about 68% of our clients know the perpetrator and is within the family cycle. So not so much maybe the institutions nowadays, it's more within the family home where the clients are groomed from a very young age and don't know that this is abnormal. So the more we talk on media, the more we talk on radio to say to people that if somebody is invading your body and you don't want this to happen, then it is a crime and you need to stand up and feel the force of Nexus behind you, or the support of Nexus behind you, to shout out and say this is wrong.
That is chilling, the way you describe that, where you're being groomed from a young age and you don't realise that it's abnormal.
Yeah, the Rowan stats, the new centre in the Antrim Hospital, if you look at the figures that are coming through, they're not stats, the people that are coming through their doors, there's at least 120 people that are under the age of 16 that have come through in the last year. It is a sad state of our society that this crime is so prevalent, and we all need to open our eyes and be aware of when somebody's not quite conforming, being a wee bit of a... not extrovert, but is just excluded from social norms or like group settings. I always think of the school kid that's walking around the playground on their own, that is just not quite engaging in the social activities and is just slightly on. I mean, it's not a typical example. That is one type of example that you can give where you just want something to trigger in your brain to say, I wonder what's going on behind closed doors with them. I wonder why they're behaving that way. Why are they acting so aggressively towards people? What kind of pain are they trying to cover when they're acting that way? So if we're all aware of these kind of behaviours, then maybe we can start asking questions. I mean, I was at the Contact conference yesterday, and somebody that was about to try and jump off a bridge to kill themselves was saying, why did nobody say, are you okay? there anything I can do to help you? And if we all had that attitude, whether it's suicidal or sexual abuse, if we all had that attitude in this society, just ask people, are you okay? Can I help? Then, well, what a better place we would be in.
Pam, I'm just wondering, if we did ask someone who seemed very stressed or under pressure, or indeed someone who was standing by the river or whatever, are you okay? And they turned to speak to you. You may be expecting them to say, I feel depressed, I feel down, I feel low, I feel worthless, whatever feeling's going through their head. But if they turn and they say to you, I can't go on living because I'm being sexually abused, what on earth does a member of the public do next when someone says that to them?
You believe them to start with. A lot of the fears for people saying that kind of statement is that they're not believed, that people would think they're gone mad and, oh, don't be silly, that couldn't possibly happen. So the one thing is definitely believe them. Then you put your arm around them and say, I'm really sorry this is happening for you. Show them some compassion and empathy. And then, right, come on, let's go and find some support for you. And there are bucket loads of organisations and statutory services that can help these people, from NSPCC to Lifeline to Women's Aid to Nexus. We're all there to support you, and we all work together to support clients that are going through this.
It's interesting how you describe it. And thankfully, in my life, I've never had anyone speak to me about being sexually abused. I just don't know what my immediate reaction would be to it. But part of your advice there, maybe conversationally, was, you know, you, first of all, you believe them, put your arm around them and give them some assistance. Crossing my mind is the last thing on earth you'd want to do is put your arm around them in case you were adding to their burden by touching them.
Yeah, I mean, I use that as a kind of literal sense, in that you're consoling them in some way, because they'll have got to a crisis point to be able to say that out loud. So in, whether it's not physically, but in some sort of literal way, don't just walk away. Don't let them see that you're shocked by this, because internally you will be. So in some kind of way, show them empathy and consideration and warmth.
But do people sometimes worry that they're going to get themselves into a hornet's nest? They regret even asking the question. There's going to be a person who's about to be accused. The member of the public doesn't want to hear it, because I don't want to be going down that road. Do you understand how people feel?
I mean, when you go through the analysis of the number of barriers that there are to clients actually saying, hey, I've been abused, it's bucket loads. Especially if you think the perpetrator's within their own family circle, they're potentially throwing a grenade into the family circle that they're being brought up in. So there could be, you know, shelter, money problems, where are they going to live, which is why all the sort of shelter homes that we've got, from Climate Community to Women's Aid. You know, there are support structures to help people stand on their own if it means that they're throwing that grenade into their family circle. But these are kind of barriers. The main one is, I'm not going to be believed, because inevitably the perpetrator has had some kind of control and influence, is of a charismatic personality that has managed to coerce people into what way they want to behave. So with that kind of charisma and charisma, you know, the style of the perpetrator, they carry a lot of weight. I mean, you look at the kind of perpetrators that we've seen in the media, the Savile and Rolf Harris, they've carried a lot of weight in their persona and their character, that it makes you think, as a victim, actually, I might not be believed, because, gosh, look at them.
Totally. And even some of the people in the Catholic Church were very assertive, strong men who were leading from the front. They give the impression that they were like that. The sort of men that, you know, you'd want them about you, because they knew what they were about. Those sorts of people can be such bluffers, can't they? As with the celebrities, the BBC-type people that you were talking about.
So when you talk about the likes of Maria Cahill, you look at the amount of strength that's oozing out of her when she's speaking on the radio and the TV. You can see the steel determination in her, and my heart goes out to her for the pain she must be feeling. But that is every victim's experience, of having to have that steel and determination, because not only are they coming out to say, please believe me, and petrified that you're not going to be believed, but you're standing up against a person that has complete and utter domination and control over you from a very young age.
Yeah, I remember one example, Father Sean Fortune down in the Republic of Ireland. I got to know him before he was arrested and before he took his own life. And I must say, he was larger than life in so many ways. He was a huge man. He was a man of 20 stone. He was also a man that when he came into a room, he lit the room up. You felt, oh, gosh, I want to talk to this guy. And the amount of abuse that he bestowed upon people was stomach-churningly sickening. And, you know, you never would have guessed it in his company.
I know, and they are clever in that they choose the victim to be the most unassuming personalities, that these people are not going to have the courage to be able to stand up to such a big personality. So you wouldn't match the two people together because one is so large in personality and the other has no confidence at all. But that's part of the grooming process, and that they choose the most vulnerable person to be able to control, because inevitably the victim hasn't really understood what true love is. They haven't had any kind of connection of true love, so therefore the grooming and the attention that they're getting from the perpetrator is just so good that they think this is what normal love is.
Well, Pam, it's just a running commentary on the proof that we need a charity like Nexus celebrating its 30th anniversary. I don't know if you were watching the BBC documentary last night about pornography and young people here who have had their pictures hijacked and put onto pornographic sites. Every parent should have been watching that. That's a lesson. That is a lesson, isn't it? It's a lesson for young people. It's a lesson for parents where innocent people can be taken advantage of. Is there any way to beat those porn merchants?
Absolutely there is. We're providing education programs that are funded by Big Lottery to try and go around schools and special needs schools to try and teach them about safety on the internet, about locking down your Facebook profile so that strangers can't get access to your photographs, about just having education embedded into our school system so that they're knowing that when you take a photograph of someone and send it, that you have lost complete control of that picture and it could end up wherever, as the programme last night revealed.
Why are 14, 15, 16-year-olds in this part of the world taking sexual pictures of themselves and sending them to a partner?
Well, our first presentation today, which is going on as we speak, is about the change of sexual norms, societal sexual norms, in that if you remember the advert we used to have was for the Old Spice. I may be advertising here, but remember the Old Spice advert, and you compare that to the Lynx adverts now.
Sure.
You know, that we're so sexualized, and that is the pendulum that has swung in our society. So when youngsters are growing up with complete access to the internet, I heard somebody say the other day it was like a unsupervised playground, the internet. So they've got complete free will over the internet, albeit you could have some parental controls, but with the likes of the internet access via your phone these days, it is a free will of knowledge. So therefore the sexual norms are going to get wider and wider and wider, or more extreme, if you like.
Pam, thank you for speaking to us this morning. Thank you, and happy anniversary, as they say.
Thanks very much, Frank. Appreciate the call.